Our Torah portion this week is a combined portion, two portions, called Matot and Masai. And it's a very interesting last segment of the book of Numbers, which is really the last of the four books of the Torah where all of the laws are being introduced for the first time. And then the last or the fifth book that we're going into of Deuteronomy is almost a recap of the entire Torah in a way, which I like to see as sort of a youth group version of the Torah, because Moshe is reteaching the whole second generation that came out of Egypt everything they need to know before going into the land and living as a nation that's set apart from the rest of the nations. The entire first generation would soon pass. But today I wanted to look at an interesting segment that I found interesting anyway, and I spent a lot of time going over it and over it with some questions that I had that I prayed about and wanted pieces that seemed to be missing to fit, and it's pretty much what I hope to share this morning. Let's look at Numbers 31. This is about the destruction of Midian. And I'm going to read, well, first let's do verses 1 and 2. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, "Take vengeance for the children of Israel on the Midianites. After that, you are to be gathered to your people." It's interesting to me that this was something that still had to be done before Moshe was done here. In the way that the Sihon was taken over and Og of Bashan was taken over, there was these things that Moshe had to do to finish his work. And one of them was to write the book of Deuteronomy. And I guess he did that after this. So he didn't die right after this. But this command to go and to take vengeance on the Midianites comes from chapter 25, 1 through 3. And if we look at that, flipping a few pages back, chapter 25, "And Israel dwelt in Shittim, and the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab." Interesting, these are the daughters of Lot, many, many generations later. And Lot's daughters were not very nice girls. "And they invited the people to the slaughterings," or offerings, "of their mighty ones," or gods. "And the people ate and bowed down," or served, "their gods. Thus Israel was joined to Baal Peor, and the displeasure of Yahweh burned against Israel." There's a lot in these three verses, and it's not really this Torah portion, but it is the background of why Moshe is going to destroy Midian, the Midianites. So I wanted to look a little bit at it. In verse 2, look at the progression that happens in just a few words. They invited the people to the offerings of their mighty ones. These are feasts, holidays. How many of us are invited every year to Easter, Christmas parties, and festivals of these other peoples that admittedly have mighty ones that are not necessarily ours, or they don't serve or worship in the same way that we do? And so the people were invited. How nice. You don't have to come, but you're welcome anytime. Oh, they're nice people. We should go. I can see how it started. But from being invited, the people ate. Now, realize the people of Israel at the time are living in the desert on manna, banana bread, manna pudding. I mean, they don't have a lot. And the people of Baal Peor had all kinds of things. They had full crops, grapes, figs, pomegranates, you name it. So they ate, and man, did they eat. They feasted. They had a wonderful time. These were the festivals. And the next phrase here in verse 2, bowed down to their mighty ones, or served, worshipped their mighty ones. Now, I don't think that they consciously took on the religion and went through the 101 class of how we keep this religion now and all that. I think that they just did certain things that were the same as serving, or they crossed a line here and there. And I'm here to tell you, I've been to Easter dinners and things like that, where out of respect, you stand there and you wait for them to finish praying or whatever, and they're praying maybe things maybe from a Catholic background or whatever that you wouldn't necessarily agree with. And I can see where maybe the people of Israel, out of being polite, because we did just eat all their food, maybe stepped a little over the line. And I could see where it got worse. Now, these gods that they worshipped in Moab, and we'll soon see they were sort of sisters with the Midianites. These gods were the gods of Canaan. And the Canaanite gods were some that they passed children through fire to in sacrifice so that they would be successful or prosperous. And one of these gods in particular was known as the Queen of Heaven. And the Queen of Heaven was a deified female that was looked to for fertility, sexuality, and war. And that in that culture, in this time, in this place, these were the Sumerian or the Mesopotamians. The Mesopotamians called her Astarte, which also you'll see in the same areas and different the Babylonian cultures, Ashtaroth. Or Ashtra, Ishtar. And these are where we get Easter. It's the same background because they celebrated a spring festival of fertility with eggs and so on. In Egypt, she was called Isis and Nut. In Sumeria, Inanna. And the Greeks called her Aphrodite and Venus, all the way up through the Hellenized times, all the way up to the time of Messiah, past that, all the way up into the new millennia, until the time of Constantine, he banned the worship of some of these, but changed it a little bit with Catholicism into Mother Mary to keep that female peace of the faith. But what he did ban was the worship in a certain way. And that way was called cult prostitution or temple prostitution. And when we look at what our brothers and ancestors in Israel fell into that had to do with these feasts, it was cult prostitution. Jeremiah 7:18, you don't have to turn to it, it's very short, I'll read it. 7:17 and 18, says, "Do you not see what they are doing in the cities of Judah, and in the streets of Jerusalem? The children are gathering wood, the fathers are lighting the fire, and the women are kneading their dough to make cakes for the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me." This thing that happened way back before Israel took the land was still happening in Jeremiah's time. Jeremiah 44. You can look at this if you want. It's a few verses, 15 through 18. I'm going to start at 16. "We are not going to listen to you in the matter about which you spoke to us in the name of Yahweh. But we shall do whatever has gone out of our mouth, to burn incense to the Queen of the Heavens, and to pour out drink offerings to her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings, and our heads, in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. And we had plenty of food. We were well off and saw no evil. But since we ceased burning incense to the Queen of the heavens and pouring out drink offerings to her, we have lacked all and have been consumed by the sword and by famine. And when we burned incense to the Queen of the heavens and poured out drink offerings to her, did we make cakes for her to idolize her and pour out drink offerings to her without our husbands? This goes on. The point is, Jeremiah is addressing a serious, serious problem of idolatry in the people of Israel, all the way up past King David, past the splitting after Solomon. You know, and we think in the Baal Peor situation, we wouldn't do that. But how, why is this so easy to fall into? I looked up the meaning of Baal Peor. Baal means Lord. Baal, the Lord, technically. And Peor is wide open mouth, which is related somewhat to like a baby bird. And the meaning that I get from that is the Lord of appetite. Baal Peor is the Lord of appetite. They worshipped their appetites. And in this day and age, we are often tempted to serve, bow down to, cross the line to our appetites on a regular basis, as opposed to being spiritually strong, knowing right from wrong, and not crossing certain lines. I believe this is why Yahweh did, and I get this from Frieda and Richard, that have taught me this, explained it to me, that, you know, almost everything that Yahweh teaches us to do in the feasts and the festivals are things that are going to be handy for us, such as building Sukkots, if we ever have to escape into the woods. But the other things that he teaches us through these festivals are to discipline ourselves and our appetites. We're to eat certain things at certain times. We're to not eat unleavened bread for a certain length of time. We're to learn the disciplines of looking to see what's in this before we eat it. We're to eat clean meats and not unclean meats and learn the difference and stay away from this and that. And, it's got bacon on it. Thanks. No thanks. We're to learn this, and all the way to the point of no matter how hungry we are on one certain day, Day of Atonement, we're to fast. We're to completely put Yahweh and the strengthened spirit above our appetites. As bad as we have a headache, as bad as we seem to can justify food, well, I've been sick. We're to learn that. We're to learn to overcome appetite in our spiritual strength and to strengthen ourselves spiritually over our appetites. I want to read through a little bit more of this now in chapter 31. The Midianites, the destruction of the Midianites. Let's pick up at 7 and read through 12. Moses basically got 1,000 people from each tribe, 12,000 in the previous verses. 7. And they fought against the Midianites as Yahweh commanded Moshe and killed all the males. And they killed the Sobrites, the kings of Midian, with the rest of those who were pierced. Ewi and Rechem and Zur and Hur and Reba and 5 sovereigns of Midian. And they killed Balaam, son of Beor, with the sword. Isn't it interesting, Beor, Peor? I don't know. I just think that's interesting. They're very close. The son of Beor. And, you know, Balaam is the one that was hired by the king of Moab to curse Israel. And 3 times he was hauled up to the top of the mountain. They did 7 sacrifices on 7 altars. And Balaam got up there to curse Israel and couldn't. He ended up blessing them. How lovely are your tents, O Israel. He just kept blessing them. And he's now killed with the Midianites. Verse 9, And the sons of Israel took all the women of Midian captive with their little ones and took as spoil all their livestock and all their possessions. And they burned with fire all the cities where they dwelt and all their settlements. And they took all the spoil and all the booty, both of man and beast. And they brought the captives. I'm going to stop there. Let's jump down to 15. And Moshe said to them, they basically brought all these captives back to camp. And Moshe and the priest, Eleazar, went outside the camp to meet them because they had just killed a lot of people. And you could not come into the camp if you touched death in any way, human death. You had to go through a cleansing process of 7 days, washing on the third day, washing on the seventh day, cleansing all your clothes, leather, objects, metal, everything had to be passed through the fire, water, and cleansed before you could come back into the camp. So Moshe and Eleazar went outside the camp to meet him. And in verse 15 it says, and Moshe said to them, have you kept all the women alive? Now I think it was probably typical at the time. Your strength militarily, especially as a nation, was purely numbers. If you were bigger than them, they weren't going to fight you. And if you weren't bigger than them, you weren't going to fight them. Now, things were a little different with Yahweh on our side. We only had 12,000 here that went up against a lot more. But when you conquered another people, the warriors would bring the women back because through women, they could multiply more warriors. And the women were basically all used to this in the era, in the middle, you know, the Middle East at that time. We've been beaten by these guys. Now, hopefully one of them will be nice to me and I'll live with him, whatever. But the women were kept. Now, in this case, Moses is saying, have you kept all the women alive? Verse 16, look, they are the ones who caused the children of Israel, through the word of Balaam, to trespass against Yahweh in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of Yahweh. And now, kill every male among the little ones. And every woman who has known a man by lying with a man you shall kill. But keep alive for yourselves all the female children. That's how they know if they were virgins or not. They're little girls. Who have not known a man by lying with a man. So, whereas they might ordinarily bring back a lot of the women and the cattle and everything and the booty from a war, they were not only to destroy the women, but of all the women came back with the little children, all the males had to be killed too. And I thought, well, that's a little interesting. And the women had to be killed. And all we had left were the little girls. Now, when I looked into this and why, it links back to this worship of the Queen of Heaven and temple prostitution. Herodotus, a historian, wrote about these houses of heaven, which were all up and down the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers and all down through Mesopotamia. There were a lot of houses of heaven where they worshiped this female deity. And I'm going to paraphrase to move fast a few of his quotes here. Every woman to sit in the temple of Aphrodite was to have a stranger. You know what I mean by have. With crowns of cords on their heads. They adorned themselves with some sort of cords that were attractive. And they lined up in the temple for men to make their choice. She does not leave there until the act is completed. For the attractive ones, they were taken quickly. For some of those less attractive, they would be there for 3 to 4 years before somebody would release them. A man casts body into the lap of one that's sitting there, and is to say these words, I invite you in the name of whatever the god was in these various temples, all these female queens of heaven. And the money becomes sacred. It doesn't matter how much. A man could throw a little bit or a lot. It doesn't matter. She is not to reject it. She is to go and follow him to his tent, taking that money and performing the sacred duty to her goddess. This goes way back, and it goes all the way up to Constantine. It's what Constantine broke off. Look at Deuteronomy 23, 18 through 19. Actually, 17. Deuteronomy 23, 17. None of the daughters of Israel is to be a cult prostitute, nor any of the sons of Israel to be a cult prostitute. So there was more to this than meets the eye. Do not bring the harlot fee of a whore or the pay of a dog to the house of Yahweh your Elohim for any vowed offering, for both of these are an abomination to Yahweh your Elohim. This is talking about that money that became sacred for one of these young ladies to serve her goddess. Here's where this becomes relevant to us today. Beyond fighting our appetites by becoming spiritually stronger, we are constantly, constantly tempted to cross these lines out of keeping Torah and out of respecting Yahweh as our God. And we don't even know sometimes that through eating something or attending something or whatever, that we might be serving, going through the activities of these other gods. Now, in the case of Israel and Baal Peor and all of that, there were many of them that were very rebellious to Moses, and they were ready to go back to Egypt. They knew they were going to die in the wilderness. They were depressed. They didn't care. But for those of us that are his people, we were more like the ones that were weeping at the tent due to the plague when a young man brought back one of these harlots into the tent that Phinehas killed. We care. We want to honor Yahweh. We want to worship him. We have to overcome our appetites by spirituality and strength. It's why Yah has us restrict our diets and so on. And beyond our appetites, there is a very strong drive called a sexual appetite that is probably stronger in young men than most. But we need to be sensitive to this, because if you blow your diet, it's temporary. If you eat something wrong and you become unclean, you can become clean. Yeshua said that which we eat passes. It's eliminated. But if a man enters, and a woman enters any kind of sexual sin, it's pretty permanent. It can ruin a marriage. It can cause children out of wedlock. And learning how to control our little appetites of chocolate cake is really, in a way, how to control bigger appetites that have more permanent damage, such as sexual sins, and even beyond that, worshiping other gods. These three levels are what this Torah portion deals with. And, you know, we think, well, we're not dealing with a queen of heaven much anymore. We've come out of that. But these things not only destroy a person, but can destroy a society like it did Rome. And I hate to say it, it has America. We have gone so downhill in our morality, in our standards. And we've got to bring them back up again. The world today has Mother Nature as a god that we've all grown up with. Oh, well, that's your nature, son. That's our nature. You can't help that. Mother Nature, don't fool with Mother Nature. You've heard all of these things. We also have science as the humanism, the god over Yahweh. Science is what created everything. Big Bang Theory, evolution, billions and billions and billions of years. If I take this microphone and smash it on the concrete as hard as I can into a billion pieces, it'll only take a few billion years to evolve back into a microphone. What's natural, organic, all these things are portrayed as good. Alternative lifestyles. Well, you might have been born that way. It's natural, it's normal, it's alternative. I think there are tendencies and temptations, by the way, that we're all born with. But I don't think that to decide on a lifestyle is a God-given right. Not when we hear that that lifestyle is not necessarily, well, that it is an abomination to him. And a lot of gods you're going to hear about lately, or the God you're going to hear of a lot lately, is the universe. I think the universe wants me to. Fortunately, the universe works everything out. Doesn't that sound a lot like the Queen of Heaven? And I hear it a lot more now. It's karma, whatever it is. We are constantly invited by television, movies, our friends and peers to lower our standards from Yahweh's standards and across these lines into what we eat, into what we do, and to whom we serve. And we've got to stay up out of that. The crowns of cords on the heads, attractiveness, are our fashion trends today. Young ladies, from reading their magazines to how their friends dress in school, are taught to dress as seductively as possible. The clothing lines that are at the top of the sales charts are the tightest, the thinnest, the sheerest, the most revealing, all the way to, I can't go to Walmart now without seeing young ladies dressed in just a thin little lace top like lingerie and what looks like pajama bottoms. They look like they just rolled out of bed. Not only are they exposing a lot of themselves, which causes a bit of a distraction for me, let me say this about men and women. You know what? We're a little bit different. A little bit. Women are often attracted to a male by special attention and touch. He singled me out. He might be the one. I met someone. He talked to her specially. Men, and touch. Men are attracted primarily visually. If you want young ladies to distract males, dress as seductively and provocatively as you can. Go for the lowest cut, most cleavage revealing tops you have. Put a great big pendant right there that sinks way down low. Wear very, very, very tight slacks or something, so we really don't even have to imagine that there's any clothing there at all. And what you're doing is you're defiling your brothers in Yahweh. You're not helping them to maintain purity in their minds, in their thoughts, and to stay this side of those lines. And young men, your friends are telling you, you're not even a man yet until. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And the men have also discovered by adolescence that I can say certain things in a certain way to a girl, and she just melts. And they play with that power in the same way that the females play with their seductive clothing. And we need to just not be a part of all of this. We need to maintain modesty, respect for Yahweh, respect for our brothers and sisters, and keeping everyone else as pure as possible in their thoughts and not letting them cross these lines and eventually cross one line way too far. That's what I got out of this. It's really what was on my heart to share. One last point is that this society will be judged. for how they are and how they have led the people of Yahweh down the wrong street. It is better to have a millstone hung around your neck and cast into the sea than to cause one of these little ones to stumble and to fall into sin. And not only are they going to be judged, but the Israelites, we, the people of Yahweh, will be judged. And as important as it was to kill all of the women of Midianite, the Midianites, and as important as it was to kill every one of the little boy males so that their seed would not continue. And by the way, most of those little boys were the product of these temple prostitutes and their society. They were sons born out of wedlock. All of them had to be destroyed. The women had to be destroyed. The only thing they kept were the little girls, which they could raise differently. And in the same way, Yahweh is going to have to wipe out all traces of immorality in his new world when he reigns here on earth. All traces of this stuff. Loose women, loose men, and the little boys who are the seeds of it, all of it has to go. It has to be cleaned up. It has to be eradicated in the same way that Yahweh told Moses, one of the last things you got to do is go get rid completely of that poison, that cancer, which affected the people and caused them to worship other gods besides me. And I cannot have that. They must be the people, my people who worship other gods, destroyed. 24,000 were destroyed in the plague because they had been joined to Baal Peor. Point made. Baruch Hashem.